Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome to 96.5 The Fan, the Fan's football show. Sitting here with, not the Mitch you hear covering the Chiefs game, but Mitch Schwartz. Was it five-time All-Pro?
Four-time. Yeah, I have.
You were first team a couple times and one time second.
I think I was first team once and second team four times, but they switched the way they did it after my fourth year, so the first year I got to Kansas City. So from, you know, before 2015, it was any tackle could be All-Pro, so no right tackles became All-Pros. And then they finally broke it up into, like, left tackle, left guard, center, right guard, right tackle. So that opened up some slots for us, you know, sad guys on the right side.
They broke it down. I will tell you this, though. This guy had 7,894 consecutive snaps, 51 straight starts at Cal. I do know they're that. But we're Buffalo Wild Wings around the city. Each week we're in a different one. Heck, we're going to St. Joe in a few weeks. We've been to Metcalf a couple times, Zona Rose, Liberty. We're in Olathe tonight. 12110 Stringline Road, Olathe, Kansas. That's 12110 South Stringline Road. Really nice out here. It's awesome out here in Olathe. And it's right off the road. I mean, turn right in, you'll see Buffalo Wild Wings right there. Next week,
smelled it before I saw it.
You smelled it before you saw it. You smelled those wings. Next week, we'll be out on Chipman Road in Lee Summit. So we'll be in Lee Summit for the Fans Football Show next week. Don't forget, you can always come in here and register. Tonight, it'll be a neon Super Bowl Bud Light Chiefs sign, which is awesome. Ooh. We see it right in front of us. You'll walk out with that. We're giving that away tonight. You can register for that four-foot-high Travis Kelce bobblehead as well. And, of course, imbibe 20 ounces of Bud Light each and every Fans Football Show and take advantage of the Buffalo Wild Wings pick six. Desmond Moses, our Chiefs ambassador, will be showing up later. All right, Mitch, we've got good things to talk about with the Chiefs. Two solid victories for this team in a row, to be honest with you. 28-18 over San Francisco. Hey, they had a lot of injuries. Chiefs did too. Juju goes down that hamstring. He was questionable to go into the game. He's not able to go. Well, the really weird thing, Mitch, is they said he's done for this week back on Monday. They rarely do that for gamesmanship. They just let it go on till Friday. It's just weird they announced it. But DeAndre Hopkins from Tennessee comes right in. That's the new news for the Chiefs this week.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously much needed. We're down, you know, three receivers now, two starters from what we expected this season, and then one of our new pickups. It is interesting. I didn't know how that went about. I mean, I think they said he had a hamstring spasm last week, which I don't know if that's just you get a knot. It's not quite a strain or a sprain or however that works.
It rolled out really fast, so I think this might linger.
Yeah, so I think the spasm turned into a legitimate strain or something. But I have noticed it seems like they are maybe announcing people out earlier in the week this year than in the past. Like Mike Dana has been out a couple weeks now, and they're just like, yep, he's not playing this week. But, yeah, getting DeAndre in is great. I mean, I think we talked receivers last week, and you just hope he stays healthy. I mean,
that's the thing.
He's a good receiver. He's no longer, you know, what he was 6-7 years ago, probably not even, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. We see receivers, unfortunately, you know, tend to, if not fall off a cliff, their production and their ability falls off once they get, you know, 28, 29, 30, and then past 30. And I think we're going to use him better than Tennessee was. So I don't think you can look at the stats and say this is what Hopkins is bringing to the table. I think he does more stuff on the field that's going to be beneficial for us than what the stats would show, just based on the offense he was in. Based, you know, it's a pretty big upgrade in quarterback coming to Kansas City.
Oh, it's waking up with Patrick Mahomes, your quarterback, completely different. And he knows Chris Jones back when they did a fishing deal a couple years ago, that reality show they had out there, and knows Mahomes. But here's the one thing about DeAndre Hopkins. He catches the football. I think, honestly, you can make an argument he's got the best hands in Chiefs history, to be honest with you. I mean, you got to go back maybe to Otis Taylor and those guys. His hands are huge. He catches everything. For example, he's got a 3.6% drop rate in his career. All right? I mean, he's got borderline Hall of Fame numbers. I mean, he's right behind Andre Johnson. He has 9 more touchdowns than Andre Johnson, who's going in this year. The 3 years he spent in Arizona when they traded him from Houston, Arizona, he had 315 targets, three drops. That's a 1% drop rate. 2018, he didn't have a single drop. So, yes, one thing he does is he'll be able to run all those routes that Rashee Rice ran, Juju, but he catches the football. Get this stat. Matt McMullen put this out from the Chiefs earlier. I had no idea about this one. 69.1% of his catches, Mitch, have gone for a first down or touchdown.
Wow.
I mean, that's almost 70% where he's getting a first down or touchdown. This is what they've desperately needed. Someone just catch the football, man. We don't need you for next year, the year after. We need you till February, man.
Well, that's the thing, right, is we need you for February, so we need you to stay healthy. We need you to kind of get used to Pat. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what he can do with a guy in the middle of the season that he hasn't played with. You know, last year with Rashee's progression, we heard about, you know, becoming Pat-friendly and what that means to kind of fit into this offense. And so, you know, Hop has played in a lot of different offenses, and he's been around. He can probably slide right in and understand West Coast terminology, or at least be able to put it into terms that he gets because he's been around so long. It is also very abnormal to get a guy on Thursday and for coach to be like, yep, we're playing him. Now, part of that is maybe because we have four guys on the active roster, five, whatever it is at this point, so you kind of have to. But that's abnormal too, but I think that speaks to his mental acuity and his ability to pick up our offense, which historically, again, receivers are slow to build in this offense. You know, whether we draft guys, whether we bring guys in, for the most part, it takes a little bit of time for guys to get up to speed. That's why they were so excited about Hollywood this year, because of what he was showing in, you know, OTAs and training camp. And
he was at Camp Pat down in Texas. He had that connection.
So how quickly Hop can get up to speed, obviously he's probably not going to be in for 65 snaps this week. He's going to have, you know, a certain package of plays. Are you going to use him more in the slot role, kind of what we're missing with Rashee over the middle? Are you going to have him kind of in the X role on the outside where he, you know, probably predominantly used to be? It's interesting. I mean, you trust this staff out of any staff to find the way to put him in a position to succeed, to understand what he can do, what he can't do. I think from the fan perspective, you know, the past few years, you look at, you know, Justin Ross and some of the other guys we get excited about, and it's like, oh, why isn't this guy in the field, or what's going on? I feel like Coach Reed has a pretty good track record of understanding offensive football and how to put guys in position to succeed. So if a guy isn't out there, that probably tells you something. And if a guy is getting out there as quickly as Hop is, that also tells you something on a positive note. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I would imagine that you know, there's going to be a couple throws early on where he just kind of uncovers himself, finds some open space, balls on him, dots him, you know, gets upfield for a few yards, and hopefully gets down safely so we can have him for a full game and for the rest of the year.
I mean, the interesting thing about him is that 2013 draft, that was Eric Fisher's draft.
Yeah.
Eric was the number one pick in that draft, but D-Hop's been playing. I mean, he's played a lot of football, man. He's played 12 seasons. I mean, he understands the route tree. I mean, his press conference is crazy. Like, he was there. He was all about business, man. He was standing on business when he was doing that. And I was proud of the media for once that they didn't ask, like, what's your favorite barbecue restaurant, T-Hop. I mean, they do that crap all the time. I'm glad they didn't do that. They kept it straight to football. But are you playing? Andy Reid trusts him. I mean, he's had to go in. You know, Juju's out. Who knows who they activate this week? I think it's going to be Justin Ross. I think he'll be activated because they can take two practice squad guys for three times during the year and elevate him. And I fully expect Ross, who's got a couple rings with the Chiefs on the practice squad, so he knows the offense. But I expect him to do a lot of that Rashee Rice.
I would ask, though, routes. With Ross, is it mental or is it physical? Because that's the thing that I think, like I was saying, from the fan perspective, we don't get to see, we don't know. Is it that he's just not as good of a route runner and ball catcher as we think? Is he not grasping the plays, and in the preseason,
well,
is he not showing
them? I think
them?
It's a physical thing. I mean, he was so bad, doctors had recommended not even – when he's back at Clemson. You know, and this guy, you know, caught touchdowns in national title games. I mean
– oh, no, he was a freak, like a freshman.
But the physical elements that got him, I mean, he was told, like, not to play football again. I mean, it's been tough on Justin as far as that's concerned, but – there's a reason they've kept him around, and they brought back Cornell Powell to put on the practice squad.
Yeah.
another Clemson connection. And we'll talk about somebody that Sammy Watkins, that you know from that team, and how I kind of draw the parallels between them both. But honestly, last year I thought it was Andy Reid's best coaching job just because, I mean, he was going into it with receivers. People were condemning his offense nationally, but they beat the number one, the number three, the number four scoring defenses in the playoffs on the road. The only reason he beat two is that was them. They were the number two defense.
Yeah.
But this year, I would argue, is his best coaching year. All of them. because they went to training camp thinking, all right, this is our offense. We got Hollywood Brown, we got Xavier Worthy, Rasheed Rice, we got Kelsey coming back. We're gonna be good. And all of a sudden, you get here and it's like, oh, we have Justin Watson, and we got Xavier, or this rookie Xavier Worthy, and we got Juju that came back off the couch, and he's found a way to win with 14 personnel, and you name it. I think honestly, it might be his best coaching job.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the worst offense we've had since Pat started, which is the funny thing. It again, is now a defensive team and kind of runs from the defense first. But,
which gets no respect because everybody condemns the offense, but they don't say, hey, this defense is good.
Well, yeah, but it's also, I mean, Pat is Pat, so we kind of have expectations of what the numbers are going to look like at the end of the day. But it's also, I think, speaks to what the offense is going through and kind of the transition. And for the most part, whenever he hasn't played up to his standards or up to what we're used to in terms of the, you know, statistical perspective and what we see on the field, there's some other factors going on. And so I think, again, that speaks to Coach Reed's ability to coach up the offense and to kind of figure things out on the fly and to completely change the tenor of the offense, to your point. Like, this was basically expected to be an 11-personnel offense. It was going to be those three receivers. It was going to be Kelsey. And then you're going to sprinkle in, you know, McColl and some of the other guys that know what to do. You know, Watson on third down seems to be Pat's guy whenever he needs him. And so we had, you know, Noah Gray, the inklings of what that was going to look like. Obviously, Pacheco, running back, kind of that physical, bruising guy. The offensive line, you know, a lot of money, a lot of, you know, investment in there. And then it all changed. And not only do you go away from, you know, kind of that 11-personnel version, but you lose, you know, Hollywood, who's quick and fast and has long speed and kind of what I thought was going to be the closest thing to Tyreek we have from a skill set perspective and from, you know, kind of that experience perspective.
I look at Worthy, too. A lot of the same skill set. So I thought Hollywood Brown maybe one year. Now I think he'll come back next year because he's not playing this year.
Well, from what so far, I would say Hollywood has more of that kind of quick twitch, getting in and out of the breaks and kind of running almost like slot receiver.
Yeah, he's not just a nine route guy. Yeah.
Right. Like, he's able to do it all with quickness and suddenness and long speed. Where right now it seems like Xavier's a bit of, you know, a slow burn where he kind of gets up to speed and then gets going. Not like DK Metcalf, but just in terms of not really snapping in and out of breaks and not, you know, being that little guy in the middle who's uncovering himself on those choice routes. So, yeah, it's just a completely different idea of what the offense was going to be. And imagine, you know, the whole point of the offseason was to get back to the weapons, to get back to the speed, to get back to the verticality of the offense. We've seen, you know, taking some shots down the field, and we haven't really connected on as many as we'd like. And that's still there with Xavier. But now all of a sudden we're back to what the offense was with less speed, less stretch, less weapons, less dynamic players. And, again, chugging along and undefeated. And the offense might not have the numbers and the accolades, but the team has the victories.
And I think a lot of times people, especially nationally, just forget how difficult it is to win a game. I mean, everybody in this league has at least two losses except for Lions, who have one. So you have none. And, you know, people are critical. And I think the interception stat is stupid because we know some of them are dropped or the receiver slips. But the one thing that's not in the stat book is what Mahomes does, the improvisation. And I know he got a lot of criticism for running on the sideline, even though because it's San Francisco, not going to, you know, push him out. But he's been hit out of bounds and not been called.
Okay.
But he was flipping the ball and things like this. So they could have knocked him out had they wanted to, but they didn't. They gave up.
Yeah, there were three guys who were chasing after him. One guy started pulling off when Pat was in the process of juking Fred Warner.
We're talking about a 33-yard run.
The other guy pulled up when Pat was, you know, four steps from the sideline. And then the third guy, the only guy that was, like, actively pursuing, was blocked by Kareem. There was no point where Pat looked like he was going out of bounds. He was trending towards out of bounds, and he was going to take as many yards as they would get. And then he felt no one there because two guys loafed and pulled up, and one guy got blocked. Go back to that Ravens game. There were no cutbacks up the side because the Ravens were running full speed, out of bounds. You know, whether he got hit out of bounds, I don't know. I mean, he gets touched out of bounds. He kind of falls down and makes it look good. He's good with that. But if you are a defender and a quarterback is going towards the sideline, it is on you to run full speed and to make him go out of bounds and to not cut back. And I think as a defender, you should be able to run full speed and then not touch the quarterback after he's at. So to me, that's all on the defenders, and that's not on Pat, because to Pat's point, like, he's not lying when he's saying that quote. He is not intending to break the rules or to, like,
he's not
be
kind of
cheap.
Guy.
No, he's not. And that's, again, we saw that last year with Kelsey, where he declined the 1,000-yard season because he didn't feel like that was legitimate. Like, Coach Reed sits guys, and he deserved to be sat, and he got sat.
That would have been eight straight 1,000-yard years, too.
Yeah, so
how unselfish she is.
So, yeah, that play has been talked about, but it just bugs me that people think that that's like, oh, this is a rule.
It drives me crazy, and he was slapped in the throat earlier in the game, and they didn't call anything. And the Chiefs don't get all the calls. Watch a Rams game last night, the face mask. I mean, you think the Chiefs get all the calls?
I just have to accept refereeing is not up to the standards we would like, but then, again, the flip side is maybe refereeing is just a lot harder than we think.
And remember everybody wanted him back when they were on strike? Oh, bring him back, bring him back. I was like, you kidding me? You complain about him anyway.
That was my – so, fun fact, I played that Thursday night game, the first game the refs were back.
We're back.
It was in Baltimore. I think it was my rookie year in 2012, and it was Gene Steratore, his crew. And at that coin flip, I think he did the, like, oh, we're glad to be back, guys. So, yeah, I was part of that game, which I always
thought
was a lot
of fun. But everybody wanted him back. I was like, you just complain about it.
Yeah. There's articles from the 60s, people complaining about
referees. They need to make them all full-time. I know some of them are, but they need to make that. We got a text here from the 913. Bink, driving through Oklahoma, roads suck, major ass, but there's endless Creed Humphrey billboards. Creed's getting some love down in Oklahoma.
All
That's
right.
Awesome. We'll take a timeout. We're at Buffalo Wild Wings in Olathe off String Long Road. Quentin back there producing the operation. Come out here, sign up for this Bud Light neon Super Bowl sign. It's really pretty cool. Look great in the man cave. Or if you're single in the living room, it didn't matter where you put it. But make sure you come out here. I do want to ask you about somebody you had on your team on the way to the Super Bowl that you won, and compare that to DeAndre Hopkins. We'll do that next.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to 96.5 The Fan, the Fan's football show, the home of the Kansas City Chiefs and 96.5. You can hear pregame, you can hear the whole game, you can hear everything, the postgame, you name it, right here at 96.5 The Fan. You don't have to change it. Our phone number, 913-586-7965. Matter of fact, you can hear the Sunflower Showdown tomorrow with Kansas State and Kansas tomorrow as well. We're at 12110 Stringland Road out in the Olathe, Kansas. Make sure you come out here. There's a sign, man. And with people registering for you, can walk out with this Super Bowl neon Bud Light sign. You can get yourself a 20-ounce Bud Light for $5. Come on out here to Buffalo Wild Wings. It's a good time. Talk some Chiefs. I mean, there's a lot of Chiefs fans in here. You're not going to find any fans of any other teams. Sometimes we found a Cowboys fan one time. So it does happen, but most of the people here are Chiefs fans. All right, the one thing you heard naturally is, all right, they didn't go out for Davante Adams. Davante, the Raiders, rivals have traded guys to the Chiefs, and I'm shocked when Buffalo's done it. I mean, hell, I mean, Mahomes wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Buffalo. And they hopped over him to get Trent McDuffie, and they traded to get Xavier Worthy. And Baltimore traded him Orlando Brown, which really shocked me because that's what the Chiefs needed. That's what they gave him. And they gave pick 58, which turned into Nick Bolton. Good trade for the Kansas City Chiefs because they needed Orlando. Say what you wanted about Orlando Brown, but they needed to have him playing in that game. But Davante wasn't going to come here. The Chiefs don't have a ton of money. I know we look at the salary cap sometimes as fictitious. They did rework Juwan Taylor and move some money around and save $5.3 million on the cap to bring in DeAndre Hopkins. But one of the guys I wanted to talk about was when Pat, you know, was first starting, you know, he was getting a guy like Sammy Watkins. Now, Sammy's had his time, was extremely fast, extremely quick. I mean, he had his injury history and stuff like that in the past. But I thought he really matured, you know, as a pro. And one thing that stuck out to me with Veach talking about what can you do in the postseason. Like that year with you when you guys won the Super Bowl, he almost had 100 yards per game.
Per reception would be something.
Yeah, it would have been great. It would have been a record. But he almost had 100 yards. It was like 96 yards a game that he had in that postseason for you. And it was really big for the Kansas City Chiefs. I look at D-Hop, how many routes he runs against the Raiders. Okay, it's fine. But you really need him when that second season starts. And you're going to have him before, but that's when you really need him.
Yeah, and with Sammy, I think the thing that people misunderstood about him and his skill set is how big he is and how big he was just physically. I know it was talked about, you know, the 4.3 speed or however fast he ran and the quickness and Clemson, all the, you know, fun plays.
He beats like Clemson. He doesn't like Ohio State guys at all.
We draft too low to draft any Ohio State receivers. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, Sammy was a big dude, and so we're doing all these bunch formations, and you got to have that big guy at the point that can kind of break up the defensive formation, because if the defense tries to, you know, press the point and muddy up the timing and all the routes kind of coming in behind it, if you put a small guy there and they're getting handsy, it's really easy to have an entire play ruined because now the two guys behind aren't able to, you know, get out in a bunch formation, or if it's just a stack with, you know, two receivers, it messes up the timing, messes up the flow. Now the route depth gets all screwed up. So Sammy was huge from, in that perspective, just being big and strong and being able to, you know, kind of push through press coverage and make sure that those bunch and stack formations were functioning as is. And then obviously he felt like more of a streaky guy just in terms of the stats. I don't think he was consistent day to day, aside from a few of the injury things, but like I think that Jacksonville game, he has a bunch of yards, and then, you know, doesn't always have as many yards. But
I think he has like six different leading receivers the first six games of the year before Kelce and Hill kind of took everything over.
Yeah, and so yeah, he was huge. I mean, he's a fun guy to be around and like to think about things in a different way, and he was fun to talk to. But to your point, I think those teams were different. Obviously, we were figuring out who we were. We were, you know, not really setting the culture because that was already here once I got here, but kind of setting the Mahomes era of what the Chiefs look like in those first few years. And it was all about, you know, attacking downfield and being physical and, you know, setting records and winning Super Bowls and those things. And now that everything's kind of set. And so you're just kind of working from there, and you get to a point where what you just said, it's just all about the playoffs. I don't think the team thinks like that. I think, especially this year with the three-peat, the team is very grounded in, we have an opponent this week, we have to play them well. You know, last year I think it was just kind of a weird year where we didn't play to expectations in a lot of the games. You know, obviously won more than lost, but kind of culminated with that Raiders game. And the coaching staff and the people in charge have to have the vision that, like, we're going to look towards January and February, and this is really what we're all about, championships. Because it doesn't matter if you're 14-3 or if you're 10-7, as long as you're getting in the playoffs. Now that there's only one bye, you know, it's harder to sell out to, you know, make sure you get that bye, because you just have to have a lot of things go right. Obviously, currently, we've had a lot of things go right. A few injuries along the way, unfortunate. But getting to the playoffs healthy, I say this every time I do media, getting to the playoffs with Mahomes, Kelce, and Chris Jones healthy is really the most important thing for the franchise. If we can do that, we have a pretty good chance. Last year solidified that beyond a reasonable doubt, that it doesn't really matter what it looks like throughout the season. This team has the ability to turn it on and to focus and to get serious come playoff football. Now, again, I think they're doing a better job week in and week out this year than they did last year in terms of bringing that intensity. It's difficult to do that every week, and especially when you are always getting every team's best shot. You know, we talked about this after the Atlanta game. They were saying, oh, it's the biggest Atlanta football game since 2017. Well, it wasn't the biggest Chiefs game even this year. Like, it just didn't matter on that level to the Chiefs the way it did to the Falcons. And that's just the way it's going to be every single time. So, yeah, the other team is going to come in a little more emotionally charged because we've got the two-time defending Super Bowl champs coming to our house, or, you know, we're going to their place and it's the loudest stadium in the world and all this stuff. So yeah, it makes the season a lot more difficult. It makes you appreciate what people and teams were doing back in the day and just over the course of history when teams have been successful year in and year out. So yeah, it's just all about getting to the playoffs, and hopefully, you know, Hop is healthy and he gets there and has a postseason run like Hopkins. I mean, Sammy, but even, you know, the Kadarius Toney trade, some people argue great trade because he had a huge play in a key moment in a Super Bowl, and whether you believe that swung the game or that was a big determining factor in that outcome, would you trade a second and a fifth if you're going to say this guy is going to help win us a Super Bowl for yep. even just one game? You'd probably say, yeah. I'm going to do that.
This year, 100%, because that D-Hop was a fifth round, but it goes to a fourth round if you play 60%, or you go to the Super Bowl, you'll gladly do that.
Right, exactly. Now, that's obviously revisionist history, you're not knowing in the moment that it's going to happen, but if he becomes a piece of the offense that's really important and we have playoff success and get to the Super Bowl and win it, you know, it would have been worth a two probably, but obviously we got him for a five, a conditional five, and might turn into a four. So pretty good value there. Obviously it's health related and just making sure that he's able to get to those cold months and get to the important moments.
The one thing, too, that it's always interesting is, you know, Pat's obviously made six straight AFC title games. I go back to that one-point loss against Tennessee, 2017. And it's always argued, because I heard Pat was doing some crazy things in practice. Not like he all of a sudden got good, because the guy was the league MVP the next year. But hearing from Derek Johnson and Tom and all these guys, you know, talking about the things Mahomes was doing in practice. Heck, you go back to Brett Veach running back to the dorms to watch, you know, him working with the scout team or whatever in training camp and doing. I mean, Nick Saban moved Jalen Hurts out for Tua at halftime of a national title game. I'm just curious, without game film and everything, had they switched? Because that's the old debate, like Gerback, Gannon. The locker room was split, you know, with the Chiefs when it came to Gerback and Gannon, which guy they wanted. But I am curious, and obviously Alex did a fine job, and without Alex Smith, I mean, he really helped Patrick Mahomes on it. But I'll always be curious, had they made that switch at halftime with Mahomes?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean,
you guys never thought that?
I never thought that at all. Okay. I mean, it was very clear Alex was the starter. Pat was, you know, taking the year off. Shouldn't say it like that, but obviously, you know, the backup that year and learning. And, you know, had a pretty good game against Denver. But still, it was Alex's team. Alex led the league in downfield passing that year.
He was saying
that was his, you know, effort year where he just said, I'm just going to start ripping this thing.
He did, man. His interviews were
so
great.
It's not like we were a sputtering offense or a team that wasn't dynamic or wasn't throwing downfield or looked like, you know, the 2013, 2014 teams where no receivers were catching touchdowns. Like, Tyreek was still leading the NFL with 50-plus yard touchdowns, and, you know, we weren't as good on defense back then, obviously, and special teams was really good. And it was a different team, and it was Alex's team through and through. And, you know, the thing with scout team is it's there's no pressure. There's no, you can do whatever you want, and it does not matter. It's throwing picks, I mean, it's not encouraged, but, like, the defense feels better about themselves that they're picking you off in practice. So it's not the worst thing in the world to throw picks or to be risky. And so turns out, you know, Pat can do that on the field where he understands exactly what he needs to do and thread it in there. But, yeah, you just have free license to do whatever you want running the scout team. So I don't think that's necessarily fair to compare, you know, crazy throws or fun things when you're running an offense to just, hey, this is the card, these are the routes, throw it to this guy, maybe throw it to that guy. Play breaks down, I'm going to scramble, you know.
But obviously you notice a little bit of difference with Andy Reid, you know, coming to training camp with having Patrick, because, you know, you'll hear about him calling Patrick at 4 a.m. or whatever, hey, I got this play. It reminds me, honestly, of Bill Walsh. You know, you think of Andy Reid and the coaching tree, because I read Bill Walsh's books, and it was great. He'd be at a restaurant, he'd write a play down a napkin. Like, he'd be sitting there with a lively call, you know, Joe Montana, hey, I want to run this. That reminds me of, like, I could see Andy Reid doing that. Like, being in a restaurant thinking, you know what? Because he did single wing offense this past week, which was awesome. Except they didn't have the spinner backs. True single wing will have the spinner backs. That will be incorporated later. Trust me. When Wentz was, you know, dialed down and Mahomes, I love that stuff. I think we'll see that later. But like Mahomes can facilitate everything he wants to do, and I think like Andy Reid, like this is the Pelton's wall. Like how are we going to develop Mahomes?
Well, yeah, and I think I didn't necessarily notice, you know, the change in Coach Reid or whatever that first year that Pat was starting. I think it happened throughout the season as we were winning and we were, you know, setting records and Pat was doing his thing and we were having fun, and it was just a different energy and a different enthusiasm and obviously a different level of success from the quarterback position. And so I think that kind of brought out the more fun side, and not that, you know, Coach Root is ever sour or anything, not fun, but just that youthful exuberance. I mean, I'm sure he had it with Brett Favre back in the day and probably reminded him the most of that. And, you know, I think that was built throughout that year. And then every year since, it's just been, you know, having fun together. And to your point, now we can start drawing up all these crazy plays. Yeah. Now, you know, we've seen proof of concept on the field. It doesn't really matter what's going on. You know, we can do these things.
Which I think is fine, Jay. It's a wait. Yeah, like get the ball in the end zone.
I think it was 2020. We ran those plays where Pat was running lateral at the snap and caught the ball in the run, which is nuts to think about. That's literally Pat in warm-ups or pre-warm-ups before practice starts. You know, they do center quarterback exchange and they get their snaps in for the day and their cadences, and it gets a little monotonous. And, you know, Pat liking to have fun just started kind of running back and forth and catching passes on the run. And then they were like, maybe there's something here. Maybe we should do something with this.
Like, I can see this guy, Patrick, you know, calling plays in the 2-minute drill. Like, he knows enough about offense. I can see him doing that. What did you think? You were there for Do We Have Time There in the Wasp. Like, what were your responsibilities in that play? Did you think it was just crazy? It's not going to work or whatever?
Well, so we, the O-line stays on the field. So Pat had gone to the sidelines. He was talking to UB at the time. And Do We Have Time to Run Wasp means, is my O-line going to...
Was it Jet Chip Wasp was the actual play call or something like that?
Yeah. Well, the Do We Have Time to Run Wasp is, are they going to protect me long enough to actually make this happen?
Because you had to protect me.
But the chip part of it meant that I had chip help, and I had the good kind of chip help. I had the tight end next to me. Fish had the bad chip help, which is the running back in the backfield, which you can't always be certain of. And I think he took his five-step drop, and then he kept dropping because he felt Bosa on that, you know, ET going inside. All the Niners fans still cry wanting a holding. It's not a holding when you run your feet like that. Yeah, so, I mean, it doesn't really matter if the protection's there if you drop back to 13 feet or 13 yards, and then you flat foot a ball across the field 60 yards downfield. So, yeah, for us, that's not – we're not part of those conversations. You know, we're on the field. We just kind of stay on the field during timeouts, and then once the huddle gets all back, you know, he just calls the play, and it's not like you come in the huddle and he's like, hey, it's going to be a downfield play. I need you guys to hold up. Like, I'm sure that happens at times. I feel like that's a little more kind of movie.
Well, the fans love it. Like 65 toss power traps, the most famous play in Chiefs history. Mike Garrett going in the end zone, and obviously Jed Chip lost. But I think Grim Reaper would have been had the Chiefs, you know, not lost. Yeah. Cincinnati, the Grim, when it's Grim, be the Grim Reaper. I mean, that the ring around the rosy play, I love, because if you're in defense, you're sitting there going, all right, where's Pastor guy? What's going on here? What are they doing? I know it looks silly, but you know what? It's actually an effective play.
It's not silly until it works.
I know. And you know, I'm thinking about on defense, you're like, all right, where are they lining up? I mean, you got to think, you know, all right, where's Patrick going here and stuff like that. We got the Raiders, obviously, big rivalry. It's Raiders week. We'll talk about that. Obviously, he's huge with Marty Schottenheimer and what he did. But Andy Reid, 11 of the last 13 games has beaten the Raiders. 18 of the last 22, he's been the Raiders. Patrick Mahomes is 18-1 on the road in the division, which is an insane stat. We're at Buffalo Wild Wings in Olathe. We'll talk about that Raiders offense and what actually scares you about them next. And welcome back to 96.5, The Fan. The Fan's football show, Jay Binkley, Mitch Schwartz, world champion, Mitch Moore, Desmond Moses, our Chiefs ambassador, here with us as well, rocking his Dodgers gear. I think at this
incidental
point, we had the World Series on tonight because they decided they had the week off. It's back tonight, so you get to watch some Aaron Judge and some Ohtani. Yeah. I'm going to be watching Ashton Jeanty beat Boise State. I already told you I'd be keeping an eye on the UNLV Boise State game. I'm sick, man.
I will say, A-Rod's on the TV right now on Buffalo Wild Wings, and he must just lay out in the sun every day, because every single time he's on, he just gets another shade darker.
He gets a shade darker. All right, Raiders week this
Living
week.
Good.
Obviously, the Chiefs have had a lot of success. Andy Reid, actually, one win shy of being the all-time coaching leader, winning in that building. Mm-hmm. Joshua Daniels has one more win than Andy Reid's got, six. But Andy Reid's the visitor. They win the Super Bowl in Vegas. It's weird saying Vegas. I mean,
I know.
The Golden Knights have developed their own fan base in hockey, where the Raiders really haven't. I mean, a couple weeks ago, the Steelers, terrible towels everywhere. Yeah. This week, it'll be Chiefs fans. We have a crew out there, our afternoon crew, Cody and Gold, are out there, and they're having a cocktail party tonight, and there's like 100 Chiefs fans already there. I mean, there's Chiefs fans all over Vegas. But one thing about the Raiders are their pass defense is actually eight. They're much better against the pass than they are rush defense. Points per game, they're 29th. They give up a lot of points. But they've been good against the pass, and obviously D-Hop playing in this game. A couple weapons were to work. Brock Bowers, to me, and he's already the rookie receptions leader, number two in the NFL behind Godwin, who's hurt now, the Chiefs face the Bucs next week. But Bowers is a stud, and I wanted him the whole way through draft because there's nobody that reminded me of Kelsey more than Brock Bowers. But the Chiefs have struggled against tight ends. Look for Bowers. They use him a lot in that offense. I think Bowers and Crosby, that's on defense, that's the main stories for that team.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, historically, you'd guard a tight end with a safety or with a linebacker, and those are mismatches. A couple years ago, I would have loved if Kincaid fell to us a few more picks. Mm-hmm. I thought he was
a heck of a player.
Pretty, it was a good tight end draft. By the way, we have one good this year.
Yeah,
would you put Jaden Hicks on the tight end, by the way? I've always been curious about that. Like, I would put Jaden Hicks on a tight end, but...
Yeah, so that's where you have to determine, especially with Devontae gone, like, mm-hmm. you just put McDuffie on him?
Yeah.
And just like, I mean, Bowers is more wide receiver-ish than even some of the other tight ends.
That's modern-day Kelsey, man.
Yeah, so but Kelsey's huge. Bowers isn't huge like Travis. I think that's what gets lost with the Travis discussion. He's a big dude.
Yeah, and he's 6'6".
If you ever see people try to tackle him, they bounce off him because he is strong. So that's almost where, like, if Bowers is the biggest threat, then put your best guy on him. What does it matter? It's, you know, they don't have Devontae to put McDuffie on all the time. So, yeah, I think that's one of the matchups. And then to your point, it's always Crosby and what he's capable of doing on the defensive side and the matchups and, you know, him against Juwan. It seems like the last few weeks the idea is kind of running those ETs or you know, inside moves from defensive ends over Juwan because of how deep he's setting. He's kind of allowing Trey to get picked a lot, and then they're looping guys over the top because Pat's feeling that, and then he has to flush out, usually to his arm side. So whether he's able to kind of tighten up the pass set and still block the depth of the pocket with what Crosby can bring around the corner, or does he just take a set and now they're kind of running games all day and they're making things muddy and making things frustrating for Pat.
How tough do you think it is to block a guy like Crosby?
Oh.
That they do move around? Because his motor, I once asked Karloftis, his former college coach, is that his motor kind of reminds me a little bit of Mac. I mean, it's not, I mean, comparing anybody to Mac is tough, but they played the Mac. He played at Eastern Michigan, Max Crosby, but he's got that. It's got to be tough going against a guy that is never going to take a playoff.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, that sucks. And it's worse. It's way worse in the run game. In the pass game, you just expect guys want to get sacks and they're going to rush pretty hard. And, you know, maybe they'll give up at the very top of the pocket. And most guys do. It's not like, you know, that's anything too abnormal there in terms of the effort perspective. And he's good enough that his second and third efforts are actually good enough to beat you. Where other guys give second and third efforts, but it's just like flailing in space and doesn't really do anything for you. But Max is good enough that the second and third efforts actually are effective and can beat you. It's run plays. It's down in and down out, knowing that you're going to have, you know, old school terminology here, but like a headache of a game that you're just going to kind of smash heads all day. And it's going to be really physical. And even a front side, you know, shotgun inside zone run where usually that's kind of just a playoff for the offensive tackle, or the one last night where Darisaw gets injured, unfortunately, like kind of
he's out for the year,
an off play for an offensive tackle.
Yeah.
Those are off plays for you, but not for Max. And he's going to put his head right down your face and he's going to make things physical and difficult. So that's where I always felt like it sucked to go against a guy like that, because it just wasn't fun and it wasn't something I wanted to do.
People are building up that he and Mahomes have this, you know, they have a healthy respect for each other. They actually like each other.
It's despite
what everybody, they actually like each other.
Yeah, it's a division rivalry. And you know what? Max Crosby is a great example. You know, I played with a guy, Clay Matthews. He's a guy that could wreck a game for a number of reasons.
Yeah,
like you said, in the pass game, obviously, guys want to get sacks. But if you see run plays, run at him, he loves it. He wants
Cobra
to eat
strike.
It up. Oh, yeah. You know, I learned from the best, Kevin Green, you know, rest his soul. He used to set that edge so strong, really make those plays. But then in the run away, you know, a lot of guys take those plays off. The elite guys like Max Crosby, man, he'll run that thing down from the backside, another TFL, a way to affect the game and get into more pass rush situations.
What would you do against Bowers? They've been heavy because they drafted Michael Myers, who's hurt now a couple years ago from Notre Dame. They build up their tight ends. How would you cover Bowers?
Yeah, I think you got to put a safety on him. Now, obviously, McDuffie.
So it'd be total safety with him or McDuffie.
Yeah, McDuffie's he's a good-sized corner.
Or you know, Connor, even in the slot.
Yeah, but I think it'll be a safety. You know, I think they'll try to get physical with him, jam up, get a little help over the top. You know, but right now he's the number one with Adams being gone. I just don't think they have enough weapons to hang with Kansas City. But again, this is a game for them. They always going to get up for Kansas City Raiders game. I can't even say Las Vegas.
Las Vegas,
get up,
yeah,
Kansas
weird.
City. The Raiders, it's always going to be a big game.
Tom
They're
Brady's
going to bring their best shot.
It's 5%, but his group has 10%.
I mean,
but
to be fair, though, this is literally the reason Antonio Pierce is the head coach. It's because of the Chiefs game last year and because of the promise of, you know, what he can do to the Chiefs and other teams in terms of the physicality and the attitude and all that stuff. So, you know, season has started as great for them as they'd like, but they have to prove that, you know, this is the reason that he's the right guy for the job.
And I will tell you this much. The help's really not coming in this year's draft at quarterback. Like, you know, the Raiders, maybe Shadur and Cam Ward. I think those are the first-round quarterbacks, to be honest with you, after watching these guys.
Cam was tough.
But they have a decision, you know, to make in going forward and what they have to do if they want to compete in this division.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's some young guys out there. You know, Shadur, they think really high of. You know, I don't know if there's some collusion going on right now, but he spends a lot of time in Las Vegas. They love him. You know, obviously Cam Ward, I think he's the top.
Cam Ward would be my choice.
Oh, man. His composure, the way he handles himself in the pocket.
He's having to come down and win games at the end, just like he did against Cal right there. Louisville, he had to score every time he had the ball. It reminded me of Holmes at Texas Tech.
Yeah, I mean, his confidence, his teammates' confidence in him, inside the pocket, he's one of the best. He can make all the throws. I love him.
Good stuff. We're at Buffalo Wild Wings in Olathe. We'll take a timeout. Come back. I do want to ask you guys, are the Chiefs done? Or are they still got a move to make? We'll ask that question next. Football show at 96.5, the Fan Word String Line, Road South String Line. We're out here in Olathe at the Buffalo Wild Wings. Make sure you come out here and register for that very cool neon sign that lights up Super Bowl and Bud Light. Mitch Schwartz here, Desmond Moses here as well. All right, guys, we already talked about Juwan Taylor. They restructured his contract. Got $5.3 million. Of course, you know, Tennessee picked up half of D-Hop's, but he still owed like $600,000 more for roster games bonuses throughout the year, which you gladly pay. They good on defense, or, you know, Nazi Johnson, you know, seems healthy now, can come back. I mean, they're relatively deep as far as the secondary is concerned. Do they still make a move, the Chiefs, or no?
I don't know that they need to, but if, you know, a guy presents himself. Again, Tennessee is kind of in the fire sale mode. There are other teams where if things keep going south, you would have someone available that you didn't expect to. Or, you know, I feel like the Chiefs have always been one of the leaders in trading fifth and fourth round picks for, whether you want to call them veterans or just established players. You know, Cam Irving back in the day, and there are a couple other guys that I'm blanking on. I think Lee, the linebacker, there's a few other guys. So we've always been aggressive with, you know, trading those lower round draft picks, even though we also tend to be one of the better franchises at turning those picks into productive players. But yeah, if there's guys available for, you know, teams that are just accumulating sixth and seventh round picks and conditional picks in the future, then you absolutely you know, turn over all those rocks and see what shakes loose.
As tough as this offense is to learn with Andy Reid, Spagnuolo, yeah. I mean, that defense is pretty tough to learn too.
Yeah, but you know what? I think it's simplified enough. You know, we've seen guys come in, guys go down, next guy up, and be able to have success. That's a testament to not only the coaching staff, but to these players. You know, that means they have a grasp on what's going on. And not only the starters, the backups. When you're able to come in and play fast, be productive right away, that's a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, also defensively, it's not as simple, but you can be like, hey, go guard that guy.
Yeah.
So like, see the guy with the ball, go chase him down. Or see the guy trying to throw, try to get past one of the guys protecting him.
This is what y'all think of us, man.
Yes, it is.
We saw rookies get picks. Jaden Hicks, draft pick, got an interception. We saw Roland Wallace, who hadn't played many snaps, comes in and gets a pick off Purdy.
But if you know, Spags does the funky stuff with disguising his zone, so that's more the safeties and their rotation. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a corner and you're in man coverage, you're in cover two,
sure.
You're in cover four, you're in cover three, you pretty much know how to play that.
Absolutely.
There might be little nuances, there might be ways they pass things off, but like, those are coverage rules that will exist until the end of time because that's how that defense is structured. So there is, you know, a little more flexibility. I always felt like, you know, the further you get away from the ball, you know, theoretically, the easier it is to kind of just get in there and get adapted. If you're a receiver, you know, you can have those gadget plays. You can have, you know, a three-route package that you're in for those. If you're, you know, the corners, you've already done all those coverages in your life. And so maybe you're just a third corner and you're in to play man coverage when you go to, you know, certain packages. So, yeah, I think you are able to slot defensive guys in a little quicker, you know, defensive line-wise, obviously.
Yeah.
You have a contain on this play. You got the big gap in this play. You know, you're going to set the edge on this one. You're going to spill if they run counter at you. Like, there are certain things that are easier to adapt to than having to know. You know, if you're an offensive lineman that gets to a team, you have to know every play and every assignment,
absolutely,
you know, for the entire game plan. Where, you know, defensively, receivers, you can get sprinkled in and you can learn on the go.
That's one of the reasons they liked Xavier Worthy back at the combine.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was not only diagramming what he's doing, but he was also showing the protections as well.
He's smart. But you know what? I think it does matter who the coordinator is. We played under Bob Sutton first, and, you know, there was a lot of week-to-week adjustments. So you had to memorize a lot of defenses to where I also played under, you know, in Green Bay. It was a lot more blackboard. So we had 20 checks that everybody knew. And no matter what defense you were in, you had a set of tools that you were able to call on and work with your teammates.
And that's what you did in Green Bay for a couple of years, right?
Yeah,
with up there. Who was your D coordinator up there? Was it? I know Green played with Matthews. Dom Capers was up there for
Capers
a bit.
Was
Capers there?
Capers, okay. Was our D coordinator.
Yeah, he's a tremendous defensive corner. We'll take a timeout. We're at the Buffalo Wild Wings in Olathe. Make sure you come out. Mitch Schwartz is sitting here. Desmond Moses sitting here as well. Come out here. Enjoy yourself. We're at Lee Summit next week at Buffalo Wild Wings. See you in a minute.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.